Thursday, June 18th on Connecticut Today, right here on WICC 600 and WICC600.com. In the 2 p.m. hour, we spoke with a couple of gentlemen who are behind a massive marijuana growing facility in Connecticut. That facility, run by CT Pharma, grows the majority of the medical marijuana currently used in the state. We gave you a portion of Governor Ned Lamont's daily coronavirus briefing in which he touched on expanded testing as he spoke from New Britain. And joining us after that was Republican State Senator George Logan from the 17th District talking about what could lie ahead in the special session for police and law enforcement reform. In particular, medical marijuana, which has long been okay in this state. This is not the debate over legal weed, but medical marijuana. Thousands of people used it in this state for a variety of conditions. A new one was just approved recently. Thomas Schultz joins us. Tom is CEO of CT Pharma. They produce and grow a lot of the medical marijuana used here in the state. Tom, Paul here at WICC. How are you?
Very good, and I'm here with Reno Ferrarese, our chief operating officer at CT Pharma.
And
so, depending on the question, we'll be able to help you.
Well, that's great, both of you gentlemen here. So you folks I know now are making advances on a large facility. I know a lot of people ask me, gentlemen, you know, where's this medical marijuana come from? Are people allowed to grow it on their own? Is it shipped in from out of state? But a lot of the growing in these states, including Connecticut, gentlemen, that happens right here in the state, correct?
That's correct. All of the marijuana in Connecticut's program is grown indoors in Connecticut and tested in Connecticut before it gets into the dispensaries in Connecticut.
And the purity, the consistency, you know, Tom, this debate comes up a lot of times in the recreational debate, which we don't have yet legal in Connecticut. How do you know what you're buying for recreational weed? It could be 5% THC, 10 or 15%. I would imagine that's strictly regulated, Tom, for the medical marijuana that you folks grow and produce.
In the medical marijuana program, all marijuana produced in Connecticut is third-party tested, and the constituents and the quality of the testing results are indicated on the product's label. Reno, you might want to pick up on that?
Yeah, that's correct. With routine testing for every single batch that we offer for sale, we do the cannabinoid and terpene potency. We test for the presence of heavy metals, pesticide residue, mycotoxin, density. This is really high purity product, equivalent to what you would see in pharmaceutical industry today in America.
And I would imagine, gentlemen, that purity to a certain level, has to be there, correct, to make sure that folks who are using this on a medical basis get the relief they need, correct?
That's correct. It's very important to note that the products on the street are obviously not tested by anybody, can contain just about anything. There's an article today that says that hemp in Florida and products derived from that hemp have been found to contain heavy levels of lead. Hemp, unfortunately, unless it's inside the medical marijuana program, is not tested. The CBD on the shelves has no testing requirements behind it, and that is the CBD outside of a medical marijuana program has no testing requirements, and therefore one shouldn't be surprised that there's surprises in the bottle. But inside our program, there are no surprises.
Gentlemen, hang on. We'll be right back with you. Folks, hang on. Bye. Right back with you. Got a break for traffic and weather together. Talking about the company CT Pharma that produces a large amount of the medical marijuana in Connecticut. They're moving into or taking over a large facility in the northern part of the state. More about where the medical marijuana comes from after traffic and weather together on WICC. medical marijuana, the stuff that is legal in the state, used by thousands of folks. CT Pharma, one of the main companies behind that. Tom Schultz is joining us for a few more minutes today, along with Reno Faragenze. Gentlemen, please talk about this huge facility. It's a bit under a quarter of a million square feet up in Rocky Hill. What goes on there?
It will simply be our new production facility. In Connecticut, the system is such that the producers do everything to produce the product, so they're in effect like a Pfizer that makes products and packages them. And the dispensaries are like the drugstores, where you have a licensed pharmacist who can talk with patients and address their needs, address any medication interaction that might be of concern. But what goes on in our production facility is producing the plants, and then from those plants producing any one of, let's say, over 100 different products that we manufacture from the basic material.
That is amazing. The 100 really struck me there. I mean, the common person would think, oh, it's just weed and that's it. But I guess it goes far beyond that, correct? We got about 30 seconds left. How would you wrap this up, guys?
So we're very excited to really this facility at over 215,000 square feet is going to really double our capacity, bringing the full industry capacity large enough to adequately meet the needs of the patients for the foreseeable future, including Breck someday.
Reno and Tom, Reno Faragenze, Tom Schultz, thank you. Guys, is there a website or anything where people can get more info here in a few seconds we have left?
CTPharma.com. There's also info there concerning the research we're doing with Yale School of Medicine.
Excellent. CTPharma.com. We'll check it out. Tom, Reno, thank you. Good luck and keep us up to date. We appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks for your time.
Thank you. Tom Schultz, Reno Faragenze. From CT Pharma. Check it out, ctpharma.com.
All right, well, good morning, everybody. Thank you all so much for coming. It's our pleasure to be here to talk about the partnership that our state has developed with the community health centers and federally qualified health centers in the state of Connecticut. And here we are on day two of phase two, and our message is simple. In order for us to successfully reopen the economy, we need to make sure that everyone in our state has easy access to COVID-19 testing. And we want everyone in urban areas, vulnerable communities of our state, to have easy access to testing, whether it's by car or just to walk up. And so earlier today, I was in Waterbury at a mobile testing site. The governor and I really want to highlight that it's important to get tested. We know as people begin to go back to work, because now 95% of our businesses can be opened, and people are concerned if their employees, they want to be safe when they go back to work. Employers want to make sure that their workplaces are safe for their employees. So our message today is very simple. Get tested. It's free. If you have insurance, the insurance companies will pay for the testing. If you don't have insurance, don't worry. The test is free to you. And by the way, if you come to the community health center to get tested and you don't already have a trusted relationship with the health center, you will be welcomed. It'll be a great place to get your flu shot in the fall when you need one. And they can help sign you up for Access Health Connecticut or other health insurance programs. If you need it. In Connecticut, we're so grateful to have the community health centers. They are trusted partners in all parts of our state. So We want everybody to know it's important to get tested. If you have symptoms, you think, or you're worried you might have COVID, get yourself to a testing site. Don't worry about having to pay for it. And if in the very, if there's a very small possibility that you do test positive, this is a way for you to get help. You don't need a doctor's note. You don't need a doctor's order. Just come right in. There's so many convenient testing locations. The community health centers have been just a vibrant, an important part of our state, and it's my pleasure to introduce Yvette Highsmith. Yvette and I are both Middletown girls, born and bred, and Yvette has been a leader of this health system here in New Britain, and she's going to talk about some of the programs that they are providing here, both for testing, and she'll also talk about how we've partnered with the health centers to do mobile testing with the help of the community health center. So she'll be talking about how the health centers will be serving our urban areas and vulnerable populations. Beth.
Thank you so much, Lieutenant Governor, and to Governor Lamont for both of you and your extreme passionate, committed leadership across the state. In these unprecedented times where we find ourselves living in dual pandemics and faced with the challenge of yet again another illness that is disparately impacting communities of color, our ability to provide access to testing in the neighborhoods where people live, densely populated neighborhoods, neighborhoods that house and support our essential workers. This is an absolutely critical step to ensuring the continued safety of health and wellness of all Connecticut residents. Community Health Center, Inc. is a statewide federally qualified health center. We are pleased to be the primary care home for over 1,000 Connecticut residents. And one of the benefits of accessing COVID testing at federally qualified health centers is that individuals find out not only can they get their test and their COVID test results, but they also, if they're not our established patient, discover that there's a gem of a resource in their communities of a health center that can provide access to medical, behavioral health, and in our current environment, emergency dental services. Under the leadership of our CEO and president, Mark Maselli, we were able to make a quick pivot to telecare. And so at the end of March, we didn't close our doors to our patients. Instead, we were able to support them as we usually did, and some in an improved manner using telecare. So we did not skip a beat in ensuring that our most vulnerable residents still had access to the services that they needed. And particularly in the midst of this pandemic, we found that behavioral health was something that I think we could all say we all needed. And so for our patients who are established with us and who already had a relationship with a behavioral health clinician, that was able to continue and to increase in some instances. And for those individuals who were not established with us, we were still enrolling new patients and still do to this date.
Yvette Highsmith there. She is vice president of the Eastern Region of the Community Health Centers Incorporated. More from Yvette and coming up more with Governor Ned Lamont. We'll see what he had to say. Some reporters' questions as well. First, though, traffic and weather together. 3:46. It's a Thursday on WICC. Now we continue at, 3:49, coming up to 10 before 4. Comments earlier today from Connecticut Governor Ned Lamont, Lieutenant Governor Susan Bisewitz, among the people gathered in New Britain. Yvette Highsmith was also on the dais as well. She serves as VP of the Eastern Region of the widely respected nonprofit Community Health Centers Incorporated, talking about the wide-ranging availability and building on that for communities of color and low-income residents, as well as they continue to battle the coronavirus.
Our families and our communities that are vulnerable, we should no longer have a system that works for the haves and doesn't work for the have-nots. We need to have consistency in access across the state. With our testing events and activities, you can see that this is a highly visible, high traffic area. We're able to serve everyone who comes out, but we have also deployed mobile testing teams where we partner with collaborative partners across the state to bring testing to where our partners are serving Connecticut residents. As a federally qualified health center, this work that we've done, we've never done it alone. We've always had well-established partnerships to ensure comprehensive care. And so it was very easy to transition to ensuring that the COVID testing was also a part of those collaborative relationships. So we, again, encourage folks to come out, get tested, be a part of the safe reopening of the state so we don't find ourselves like other countries and other states experiencing a resurgence or spikes in new cases and infections, but also continue to take care of your general health and wellness. COVID has not removed the need for children to be immunized. We have set up immunization clinics that mitigate risk, and we are able to ensure that our families are coming into an environment that, again, mitigates risk and exposure and heightens and emphasizes safety, but also individuals with diabetes and hypertension and cardiovascular disease still need care, and federally qualified health centers are here and willing and able to support you. So thank you, Governor. We appreciate your continued support.
Yvette, thank you so much. It's now my pleasure to introduce a medical doctor and also state representative, Dr. Pettit. And his intern.
Thank you, Lieutenant Governor. Thank you, everybody, for coming out on a hot day. I'm sure you'd all rather be at the beach, golf course, swim pool. Testing remains critical. And I'll direct this first at the people in 22nd. I represent New Britain and Plainville. You can get tested here at the Community Health Center of New Britain. We, the Lieutenant Governor and I last week were at AFC Urgent Care. You can get tested there. The Wheeler Clinic does some testing, as do the CVS. If you have symptoms or you're concerned, you should get tested. William III here got tested. He was not happy about the test, for sure, but he said it didn't hurt, and he was, thank goodness, negative. I think there's less motivation for people to be tested, given the fact that the numbers in Connecticut have fallen, and we're one of the half a dozen green states in the U.S. But remember, even though we're below 200 for total hospitalized with COVID and we've been under double digits for deaths, and I think you all know it, those are statistics, but, one death to the people involved, that's a tragedy. So every death we can prevents a tragedy. So appropriate testing and follow-up still makes sense, and we've tried to make it widely available and easy for folks to do around the state, not only in the 22nd district here. So I thank you for the services that you provide, and though you didn't talk about specifics, I assume you're doing the PCR testing for active viral infection, antibody testing to see if people have positive antibodies, which are two different tests, and people can discuss it when they come in to see which test they need. So I thank everybody for getting the word out that testing is still critical. And I'll just end with, the simple things make sense. The masks that you're all wearing, social distancing, hand washing. And as we're seeing, there was a great review article in the Wall Street Journal. All this knowledge has evolved, and a lot of people complain about mistakes that are made or missed decisions, but we didn't understand how the biology of this virus when it first came out. We didn't understand there was a 2 to 14 day pre-symptomatic incubation period. So the simple thing, so avoiding tightly confined areas with where you're in a small area with a contained airflow is an issue. So being outside is great. Having your mask on is great. A lot of hand washing and social distancing will take care of 90% of the problems that we have. So thank you for inviting me. Thank you, Lieutenant Governor and Governor. And William, I had to explain to him all these people are, and he sort of wanted to know who in your group was in charge of food.
There you go.
None of them.
No, thank you so much, Dr. Pettit. And I think it's really important to point out another reason to get tested is there are so many asymptomatic people who could be carriers for COVID, yet another really important reason to get tested. That's why the governor and I have both been tested. to get the message out to everyone. And with that, it's my pleasure to introduce our great governor, Ned Lamont.
And we will hear from the governor coming up after the news, top of the hour at 4. So once again, the governor and Lieutenant Governor Susan Bicewicz pushing testing today in New Britain, along with Dr. William Pettit, member of the Connecticut General Assembly, his son next to him, and also a member of the management team at the health centers, the Community Health Centers Incorporated, a major provider of health care to many low and underserved areas, headquartered in Middletown. Great folks they are. So we'll hear from the governor coming up after the news, top of the hour at 4, right here as we roll along. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Look at that. There's a 6 up there. Traffic and weather together on the 6s right here on Connecticut Today. Yes, we are coming up after the news, top of the hour. More of the comments today from Governor Ned Lamont. Bottom of the hour, 4:30, Republican State Senator George Logan represents part of the Valley, part of the heart of the WICC listening area here. Our crack engineering department has just told me that they have fixed the... we had a little bit of an outage on our web stream, so if you were, you know, trying to listen to us on your spiffy new smart speaker, we're okay. We're here. They didn't nuke us. We're fine. It's just that we had a little problem with our internet stream. I pointed it out. We were getting messages on Facebook, and look at that. The engineering department, our two fine engineers here on hand at WICC and Connoisseur Media, they fixed it. Okay, keep it right here. We'll have news top of the hour. A whole slew of things going on in D.C. today and around the world. Traffic and weather together. And then the comments earlier today as we're into phase two of the coronavirus reopening. Governor Ned Lamont will entertain us straight ahead right here on WICC. And for that, we thank you. Thank you. Thank you. 407, almost 408 right here on Connecticut Today, where the phone number, as always, is 203-333-9422. I almost gave Connecticut a new 208 area code. This area code 208, Mom. 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. All right. Eric, the producer's here. I'm here, your humble guy on the radio here, Paul Pacelli. Hope all is well with you and yours. Listening to us, of course, you are on the radio on WICC 600 or on WICC600.com. We had a little bit of an internet stream problem that has been corrected by our engineers. So thank you. Thank you to our big engineering staff for that. Some remarks right now from earlier today. The governor went early today, so we'll talk to Governor, or we'll hear what Governor Ned Lamont has to say. He and Lieutenant Governor Susan Bicewicz, State Representative William Pettit, members of the healthcare community in New Britain today to talk about how the state is doing on day two, or day kind of one and a half of the reopening here in phase two. The governor and all those officials on the scene today in New Britain. So let's give that a listen, shall we?
William Mookie Betts Pettit, you'll be there in the Red Sox uniform sometime. Look, Yvette, first of all, let me just say we love what a community health center does. A community health center brings good, comprehensive health, no questions asked, no cost to the people. And that's what the Community Health Center of New Britain does and community health centers across this state. And a special shout out to, I think you're known as Dr. K. Do I have that right? Dr. K is a lot friendlier than that face shield may let you know. But Dr. K is here. We've got the testing available. We've got lots of testing capacity. And as you know, Bill and Susan both said, New Britain was hit pretty hard. New Britain was hit pretty hard, Dr. K, by the COVID virus. And yet we're only 50th in terms of testing. So it's here, it's available, it's no questions asked. Dr. K will be happy to take care of you, and you can drive right through. And by the way, while you're driving through, you can also get a vaccine. You were just mentioning to me, isn't that correct?
Immunization.
An immunization, you can get an immunization. And that's really important as well. We've got another flu season coming up in the fall. We're trying to make that easier for you. Look, a lot of basic primary care has been put off over the course of the last 3 or 4 months. People have just been a little anxious about coming in. There's no need to be anxious. It's available. It's right here. And as a vet pointed out to me, the other thing we've learned a lot more about over the course of this pandemic is telehealth and how it's easier and easier for you to get a basic conversation with a doctor, a primary care doc, either online or by telephone. So we're doing everything we can to bring the health care to you, but it only works if you open the door and reciprocate. Obviously, what testing means in a town like this, it means not only you know you're safe, but your neighbors know they're safe, your family knows they're safe, and if you do test positive, we can keep them all safe going forward. So it's so important what we got to do. So Yvette, thank you to you and your whole team. And just in case you don't know, Josh Jabal, who's been leading our COVID effort here for some time, is quietly in the sidelines. That's it. Where'd you go, Dr. Kay?
All right, questions?
Governor, can you explain to us why the change in policy regarding nursing home testing now, according to your order last night, if there's, no positive tests in 14 consecutive days, there'll be no longer any required staff and resident testing. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'm going to start, and Josh can take this. But, Paul, one of the things we know how tragically hit the nursing homes were. We got there early in terms of a lot of the basic protocols, especially in terms of visitations, in terms of testing. But we are now in there testing every single patient, testing every single nurse that's there, doing that on a regular basis. We have more testing capacity than we had 2 months ago. There's no question about it. And we get a faster response. You know, 2 or 3 months ago, it would take 3, 4, 5 days to get a response from that lab in California. And by then, an infection can spread. Anything else, Josh?
Yeah, just on your specific question, Paul, it's just to completely align our state policy with the guidelines from the CDC and also the Centers for Medicaid and Medicare Services, which recommends that if you have a facility that tests completely negative, both staff and residents, for 14 consecutive days, then the repetitive testing is no longer required. If you do get another negative case or a positive case in the facility, though, then the whole regime resumes.
So then you would have to. How many? The orders specified that the testing of staff start on June 14th. Do we have any information on how many nursing homes? I mean, I realize it's only a couple of days, but.
Yeah, but we, as I think you know, we've been testing in nursing homes now for several weeks. We report that data and the results in our data package every Thursday, so we'll have an update on that in our package this afternoon. And now we're setting up now this weekly repetitive testing that's already started ramping up across all the facilities across the state this week.
Do the nursing homes have the ability to separate? Tested positive. I know that was an issue early on. I mean, how do you keep them away from others? How is that being addressed?
Yes, this is fundamental, critical importance of infection control in our nursing homes. And so most of the homes have the capacity to do that, have been doing that. This is a key part of the inspections that our DPH and National Guard team have been doing. Wherever there's a case where they can't do that for whatever reason, that's why we set up these alternate COVID facilities as well, to provide overflow capacity where it's needed. But fortunately, we're in a position now where most homes, the infection rates have gone way down. They're in a much better position.
And the other question I had, now that family members are able to see their loved ones, how is that going? I know it's outside only, but what protections and, you know, to make sure that it goes well?
Yeah, that's increasing in a number of facilities around the state too. As you said, outdoor visitation. It's an incremental challenge for the staff in the facilities to be able to carve out the time to do that. Some of them haven't gotten there yet, but we're working with them, trying to make sure that that's happening. It's critically important. You can be sick from COVID. You can also be incredible health impacts from not seeing your family, being isolated in a room for 3 months. It's heartbreaking, and we're really working with the homes to try to make sure that that's increasing as well.
You did give the nursing homes some immunity for civil lawsuits. And some of the law firms have actually started advertising campaigns now, asking people, if they have loved ones who were treated poorly, to contact them. So are you considering rescinding that immunity?
Look, we're taking a look at it, but at the time, and we did give them a protection from lawsuits going back, I think, a couple of months. We did the same thing for the hospitals. As you know, with the pandemic crashing on us like a wave, we are working closely every day with the nursing homes, setting up COVID-only nursing homes, a lot of back and forth. So we thought the immunity was appropriate in order to allow people to respond very quickly. At the same time, you know, gross negligence, at the same time, we still regulate. At the same time, we can still fine people. And we'll take a look at the immunity thing as well.
I also just wanted to ask you, how do you think phase two opening day went? Do you have any specifics on businesses that might have been forced to close or were cited or were warned for anything?
Well, I met with the head of the Restaurant Association yesterday, Dan, and he says he thinks overwhelmingly the rest of the restaurants got going yesterday or at least this week. And they really wanted it in time for Father's Day, which I appreciate. And I think so far the protocols were handled very scrupulously. And I think we're probably in a very good day, too.
All right. Comments there from Governor Ned Lamont earlier today in New Britain. No surprise, folks, as I predicted here. Now the nursing home thing, you see, is coming to the forefront. They're emphasizing more testing. But, you know, one of the questions that was asked there of Governor Ned Lamont and of his staff, the staff that's on hand there, what about liability for these nursing homes? So this is going to be something that's going to be, you know, very interesting for this to watch as it rolls ahead. Traffic and weather together. Let's do that, shall we, on the sixes, mornings and afternoons, 416 on WICC. Giving you highlights of the conversation earlier today between Governor Ned Lamont and reporters as the governor was on hand in New Britain, along with Lieutenant Governor Susan Bicewicz, Josh Jabal, the state's chief operating officer, an official from the community health care centers, and also State Representative William Pettit to again push testing, keep pushing the COVID testing. And once again, after all that was done, the governor took some general questions from the assembled reporters.
Specifics, though, on the citations or the warning?
I don't think I have any warnings on that as yet, no.
Are you talking about an executive order? Or are you talking about changing state law?
No, if I did it, I'd do it by executive order, just the same way we did it. It all ends in September anyway.
Governor, you made some comments yesterday about not wanting another round of $600 federal unemployment help, but that seems to be completely opposite to what the Connecticut congressional delegation wants. Would you comment on that, please?
Well, what I said was, rather than a $600 true-up, what I really would appreciate is them making a grant to our unemployment compensation fund. As you know, during our first year, we got a couple $100 million extra into the fund, and that was really important. But that just bought us an extra few weeks, given the nature of the unemployment claims. So if I was recommending to the federal government, I'd say, you know, rather than the true-up right now, make it a grant, not a loan, to our states. This is true of 50 states across the country. That would allow us to keep unemployment taxes low. And we'd still have, of course, our unemployment claims for everybody in need.
Governor, that $600 for a lot of people has been an absolute lifeline. What do you say to the people who won't be able to pay their rent or won't be able to make it on state unemployment comp alone?
Well, we've got the state unemployment compensation. We've opened up 95% of our economy. We're urging everybody we can to get back to work. You've got another month, now's the time to plan for that day that you get back to work, now that all the stores and businesses are pretty much open. Maybe wait 1 second.
The governor earlier today at a news conference in New Britain taking questions from the on-hand reporters.
State holiday, or there's even been talk about making it a federal holiday. Do you have any thoughts about that in Connecticut?
We've talked to a few folks in the legislature about that. We'll take a look.
What are the prospects of that happening? What are the considerations there?
See what the appetite for that is. Is that we're losing a day of work. We got Martin Luther King Day. But really, given George Floyd, we know this is a special time to pay attention to racial justice. Susan?
Or perhaps we could trade it for Columbus Day.
the job support for May came out. It shows a gain of 25,000, I think 200 jobs overall, 30,500 jobs gained in the private sector, but we still had a record 269,200 jobs lost in April, and the May numbers are still down 223,000 from May 19. Your thoughts on this? Is this a sign of recovery, or a sign of recovery? And
I think people are slowly
getting
back to work. And we're doing everything we can to make it easier for them to get back to work. We're providing free training certificates for everybody on unemployment right now. Give them an opportunity. Right now, as we speak, we have the online jobs fair at no cost with 60 employers all looking for employees to go online there. Our great hope, Paul, is that I know everybody's not going to go running back to the indoor restaurant or running back to work, but we want them to be able to walk back at their own pace, but be able to know that they got a job there. We're ready for them.
You've talked about allowing wine to be sold in grocery stores. Do you have any update on that, or what the pros and cons are of that?
Yeah, we were at the winery yesterday. They brought that up. I said it's something we'll look at. Let me talk to the legislature about that and see where they are. I know many other states have done that already.
Governor, I know pools were part of the phase two reopening, but the weather's about to get pretty hot. Do you have any, are splash pads going to be a part of that? State parks, where can people go to cool off? And are you concerned about social distancing there?
Well, I'm always concerned about social distancing, but I'm proud of Connecticut because they have kept up their guard throughout. As you know, we never closed down our beaches, unlike our neighbors. We never closed down our state parks, unlike our neighbors. And now, as you point out, our pools are opening up. So I think it's a good time to do it. Watch out of pools. You can be close in and keep your distance. I think they are. I got to check that, though.
Governor, in terms of how you can restart the economy best, do you think that a person who is on unemployment and getting that $600 in federal money as well is likely to spend more and do more for the economy than somebody who goes back to work for a minimum wage?
There are a few other ideas out there, one of which is we'll pay you $450 when you go back to work. That's a plan that's circulating around the House and Senate as well. I'm doing everything I can to encourage people to get back to work, make sure that they can do it safely. If they can't do it safely, if they don't feel like they can do it safely, they'll be reluctant to go back.
George Logan of the 17th District, a wide-ranging district, portions of Hamden, Woodbridge, Ansonia, Bethany, Naugatuck, Beacon Falls. It's like a travel guide in central Connecticut. Senator, how are you? How you been?
Oh, doing well, Paul. How are you doing?
I'm all right. I've been all right. I've been hunkering down. Got my, all a man needs, Senator, is mac and cheese and, Diet Coke, and that's all I need, a roof over my head. And I'm a simple man, George. I'm a simple man.
I hope you're getting on a little bit. We have some incredible weather these last days.
Yeah, no, it's good. I go out for my nightly walk just trying to stay sane, 45 minutes or an hour just as the sun goes down. George, I wanted to have you on. Somebody pointed out to me earlier in the week there was a group letter signed by your compatriots on the other side of the aisle there, the Senate Democratic Caucus, and it was published in the Hearst papers, the Connecticut Post, I think, at least had it. And they were talking about, as we look ahead now to September and beyond, George, which obviously the tragic situation with George Floyd, and feel free to comment on that as well. But, George, one thing I was talking openly about this last week, even before I saw this letter, I said, let's be careful here not to take the horrible death, George, of Mr. Floyd, and all of a sudden, let this be kind of a cause célèbre for a bunch of things and lose focus on what we need here, which is police reform, getting rid of bad police and bad discipline, which to me, Senator, would solve a lot of the problem. But I'm suddenly reading a laundry list here, all laudable things, and I'm saying to myself, is this now going to become, George, the way we deal with, for example, you folks on the Republican side have to deal with, budgetary things where it's kind of our way or the highway here. You know what I mean by that?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, first of all, I certainly want to say, regarding George Floyd and, his family and friends out there, it was horrible what happened to Mr. Floyd. And those officers should be prosecuted to the full extent of the law. horrible. But I tell folks all the time, look, I said, Connecticut is not Minneapolis. We're not Baltimore. We're not Ferguson. We're not even New York City. So we have been taking steps right here in Connecticut to improve our policing, particularly our community policing. And there's always room for improvement. And at least in the districts, you know, that I represent, where I have a very direct and regular communication with, and I work with those police departments in Ansonia, Derby, Naugatuck, Hamden, Bethany, Woodbridge. I know the folks there are trying hard to do better in terms of working within our community and improving their policing. I do agree, just like in any other profession, any other walk of life, you're going to have some folks that are good at doing their jobs, and there's others that are terrible at doing their jobs. And when it comes to policing, serving the community, right, we have to do, I think, better in weeding out certainly those bad cops. I think it's the responsibility of the leadership in the state, from the governor down to the first selectman and chief elected officials of the towns, and these police chiefs as well. There are barriers that we have in Connecticut, right, for getting rid of and weeding out the bad police officers. That having to do with many of these union contracts makes it extremely difficult to get rid of bad police officers. You look at Minneapolis, you know, that individual, that murderer, the one that had his knee on George Floyd, he had over like 18 complaints, serious complaints, and like in 19 years of service. Yet he was still on the force, still training other police officers. And that's the kind of thing that we have to try to avoid.
Republican State Senator George Logan is the guest. Senator, hang on. We'll be right back with you. First, traffic and weather together, coming up on 436 on WICC. He represents the 17th District in the Connecticut State Senate, portions of Bethany, Beacon Falls, Naugatuck, Hamden, Ansonia, Derby, Woodbridge. Republican George Logan joins us for a bit longer. George, I'm reading here this open letter that was sent by Senate Democrats that appeared in several publications. And one paragraph, George, kind of struck me, and I'm going to just read it here quickly, saying the Connecticut legislature has remained in neutral for far too long on basic vital changes to our existing public policies, changes that can make a real and substantive difference in the lives of a third of our population. We have remained stalled on real progress, but we hear the voices of those in the streets on and on and on. Okay, which sounds laudable, George, but as someone asked me the other day, with all due respect, which party has been controlling both chambers of the General Assembly since the mid-'80s? What am I missing here, George?
Yeah, I know. I totally agree. And also, the fact that that letter even went out, right? What happened to bipartisanism? We have to have I'm afraid that this is being politicized in the sense that they're not looking at getting the voices of all the people here in Connecticut in terms of how to improve policing. And that, it, to me, is missing the point. The point of it all is that we all have to work together to improve policing here in Connecticut. And to have one faction or one party or one group of folks try to come in here and tell us how we need to change or improve policing without actually getting the community involved and the community commenting on it, I think misses the whole point of where we're trying to go as a society, as a state, as a country. We need to talk about this more openly. And look at here in Connecticut. Just last year, we passed a bill that increased police transparency, police accountability. It passed in the Senate unanimously. It requires police officers, police departments this year that they have to report whenever they use chokeholds or whenever they use excessive force, so we can get data and we can actually base decisions moving forward based on information and based on data. And a lot of this was led in a bipartisan manner in the legislature. And now to claim that no progress has been made, we have been making progress. Again, Connecticut, we are not other states in the United States of America. We here in Connecticut are our police officers. The vast majority are very good at what they do. They care about what they do. They take an oath of office to serve the public, right, and to maintain law and order in a respectful manner. And they're working their tails off to do that. And I've been working with the police in my district to try to improve policing in our community, relations between the police and our community. More needs to be done, but I think it needs to be more all-inclusive in order for doing that.
So, Senator, is there a worry among maybe your Republican caucus and maybe even some others on the other side of the aisle that in a short session coming up in September where you have to deal with budgetary issues, where you want to get some police reform fine-tuned and other things, maybe nursing homes after COVID, is there a fear there that, George, this is just going to be waived for a lot of electioneering here in November, heading toward the November elections, kind of waving a laundry list, a Christmas list of everything that's going to be done by just, you know, one caucus up there?
Yeah, you know, when I see this being handled in a partisan fashion or partisan manner, it causes me pause, you know. And unfortunately, you know, when we take a look at going into special session, there isn't going to be a lot of time. If you want to get something through, it needs to be in a bipartisan manner, or it's going to be very difficult to go through. So part of me would say, do they even care about something happening? Or do they just want to propose something, anything, and then when it, if it doesn't pass because it wasn't done in a bipartisan manner, then they can use that as a hammer over Connecticut Republicans' heads. Says, hey, you see, we tried to get this done, but they stymied it. They stopped it. No, that's not what it is. This is a serious issue that requires public input, public opinion in terms of what we're trying to propose, to get ideas and thoughts from the community. And right now, to try to bully that through and push that through in a special session to do anything meaningful. Now, if you're looking to do something in sort of a token sort of legislation in terms of police reform, that is not, I think, what we're trying to do here. We need to put in the time, be thoughtful about this, and bringing all the right parties, all the parties, the community, police experts, legislators, and really look on how we can move the needle forward in a meaningful, lasting way. But to try to rush and jam something in, I think is the wrong way to go.
And, you know, George, finally, I was looking over the basic outline of what that police committee came up with a few years ago. I was reading all the things here on the show, and I said, okay, that makes sense, that makes sense, that's going to be good. And I got to a couple of things here, George, and I emphasize to my listeners, listen, folks, this is just a working outline. Who knows how much of this is going to be passed? But, you know, I got to things like, you know, not being able to pull over cars for certain violations, you know, mechanical violations. And how often do we hear that, you know, that happens and you find, you know, a ton of drugs in that car or something like that, in all communities, not just black, but black, white, all over the country. My fear is, George, that there's going to be a little bit, maybe the police can push back on this. We want real reform. We don't want, George, micromanagement by right. legislators who've never spent 10 seconds wearing a uniform, a badge, or that's a right. gun.
Or go out every day in the normal course of their job, every day, to put their lives on the line. Every single day. And they've got loved ones. They've got families, you know, as well. We need to be balanced here. And we certainly don't want to send our police out there with one arm, you know, behind their back, so to speak, to try to do the job. It needs to be practical. Whatever we do in terms of changing our policing here in Connecticut, it needs to be practical as well as thoughtful and as well as actually impactful. And when we try to rush something through, usually you're going to miss the mark there. And so I just want us to just to move forward cautiously. Make sure that we think this through well, and that we make changes in policy and legislative changes that are actually going to be meaningful and not just be used as political yeah. campaign slogans moving forward.
Yeah.
And again, I'm just not in favor of rushing something through, and I'm not in favor of this occurring in a partisan manner. So the Connecticut Democrats need to come to the table. They need to include Connecticut Republicans, because Connecticut Republicans, just as Connecticut Democrats, want to see improved policing. We need to do it in a responsible manner. I mean, look at me. I have not been asked to attend any legislative writing sessions for the bill that Senator Winfield is putting together. I've got to do my best to find out what's going on and stick my nose in as best I can.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm even working on coming up with my own legislation.
And for those who may not know, George, who may not know, you are an African-American gentleman, you know, who represents a pretty mixed racial, even majority white district in some of these towns. How is it that nobody even called you and said, George, why don't you come sit down with us? What do you think? Talk about your experiences. How is that?
I have no idea. Has it happened yet? But that's why I think that it makes you pause. It makes you think. Are they trying to? Is it real? Are they really trying to improve policing here fully, or is there something else going on in terms of looking for political maneuvering here in an election year? That is the worst thing that we can possibly do as a state. Look, I'm here ready to help to improve policing here in Connecticut, but I think we all need to be at the table. Both Democrats and Republicans and the public needs to provide their input in a manner that is going to be helpful. And right now, to try to push and have a small group of folks kind of set the path forward for the permanently into the future, that is, I think, not the way that we do things here in Connecticut. And I just hope that my Democrat counterparts here in the legislature really behave more in a bipartisan manner moving forward, so we can really get some meaningful legislation and some meaningful policy changes that are practical and that are actually going to help the people of Connecticut.
George, thank you as always. Take care, and we'll be in touch. Republican State Senator George Logan. George, thank you. Be good.
You too. Take care now.
Thanks. Bye-bye.